Totem poles have been misunderstood since the first time they were sighted by European explorers in the 1700s. When Captain James Cook saw them off the coast of British Columbia, he called them truly monstrous figures. Early missionaries thought the poles were worshipped as gods and encouraged them to be burned. And even today, when someone refers to the low man on the totem pole, they may not realize that the bottom figure was often the most important one, and it usually wasn't a man. As part of the series Present at the Creation, NPR's Robert Smith reports on how such misunderstandings almost destroyed the art of totem poles before they could become cultural icons.
Today, explorers to the Pacific coast come in massive cruise ships. But just like their predecessors, when they disembark at small towns like Ketchikan, Alaska, they want to see the totem poles.
Over here, way up on top, you see there's an owl.
The townsfolk are happy to serve as guides.
That owl represents the knowledge he holds, the spiritual power, knows way more about the human body than any man on earth can.
Now you're part of the bear hunter. At the very top of this pole is a loon. That bird represents the family that owns the
two poles in front. This is Raven, and Raven's holding onto the sun there. This is the most famous story about the creation of light on Earth. So it's about a 15-minute story, but I have a minute and a half version for you. So,
never mind that the tour guides sometimes tell different stories about the same figures. The totem poles speak for themselves. They tower over the native village of Saxmund, some 30 and 40 feet tall, and they're all different. Some are plain poles with just a single figure at the top. Others are so densely packed with animal imagery that limbs are intertwined and little faces peer from ears and mouths. Becky Eisman is a cruise ship passenger from Oregon.
What did surprise me is that the tools that they have used are, you know, so crude, and that they're able to make these amazing expressions of their tribes or their families.
Nathan Jackson would likely laugh if he heard his ads referred to as a crude tool. The steel was made in Switzerland and is so sharp you could shave with it. With each swing of his arm, a perfect little cedar shaving the size of a fingernail flies off.
The pole that I'm working on is a 30-foot pole that's going up to Anchorage, called Opening the Box of Wisdom.
Jackson is from the Tlingit tribe, and he's working in a shed next to the Saxmund Village totem poles. He restored some of the poles outside, and his original art can be seen in museums around the world. In this project, he's working from the top down and putting exquisite detail into the human figure that will sit 30 feet up.
Now, nobody can be able to appreciate that except maybe the birds.
Despite the precision tools and the jazz on the radio, much of the technique of carving totem poles hasn't changed in hundreds of years. Massive red cedar trees are slowly chipped into stories and figures. Jackson has studied the older poles, their detail and symmetry, and learned from the early carvers.
It's too bad we didn't get a chance to see or talk to any of these guys, as they were pretty good themselves. It'd be dandy to get a critique here and there.
Not much is known about the first totem poles, only that the original carvers belonged to just a few tribes that lived here on the Inside Passage, a protected waterway that runs from Seattle to Juneau. Because of the wet winters here, a totem pole usually only stood for at most 70 years before it crumbled and was lost to history. Anthropologists can only rely on how early explorers described the totem poles in tribal stories. The Haida people tell legends of fully carved totem poles washing up on beaches or being spotted under the water, but there's no story of the original totem pole.
The sense is that they are from a mythical past, that, you know, the previous ancestors created them.
Bill McLennan is a curator at the Museum of Anthropology at the University of British Columbia. He says we may not know where they came from, but we know what they were for. Early totem poles were like billboards for rich and powerful native families. With early traders came more wealth and more poles.
There was a great outpouring of art at that time period because there was new chiefs who had come, had, I guess, gotten involved with the fur trade and become fairly wealthy fairly quickly and were commissioning a lot of work.
But the flourishing of totem poles didn't last.
The epidemics that came in, the smallpox, the measles, and influenza, took a huge toll on the population. That's a difficult thing at any population, but when you have an oral tradition, in other words, your histories and everything are recorded through oral means, then there's a huge loss that takes place. There's no question about that.
At the same time, the Canadian government banned the potlatch, the huge party that accompanied the raising of totem poles. Native children were shipped off to residential schools, and the skills of carving didn't get passed on. But even as the art was dying on the Northwest coast, totem poles were getting famous. poles that were bought or stolen from native villages were showing up in museums around the world. In movies like this 1936 musical, Rosemarie, totem poles appear beside teepees as Indians in headdresses sing Totem Tom Tom. They didn't care that they were mixing the symbols of several different tribes. Totem poles had become generic icons of Native American culture, used in TV shows when the script called for something mysterious or primitive. Gloria Burns, a Haida guide at the Totem Heritage Center in Ketchikan, says the poles were serving everyone except the tribes that made them.
It didn't the people no good to have their poles be in a museum way across the country, where their children woke up, still went to school, still dealt with the issues they had to deal with, and didn't look at them themselves.
It took a coalition of natives and non-native scholars to help rebuild the art in the 1960s and 70s. Old poles were taken back from museums and restored. New poles began to be carved for parks and institutions and collectors. And just like in the old days, they are being used as symbols of wealth and power. On the Jamestown Sklallam Reservation in Washington State, the Seven Cedars Casino is sporting a totem theme. Three new poles already greet visitors in front of the casino. Four more are being crafted by a team of carvers out back in the tribe's garage. Steve Brown, a former curator at the Seattle Art Museum, is helping carve the poles. Casinos might not seem like the right place for such a traditional art form, but Brown says the poles out front will serve the same purpose as they always have for Northwest tribes.
We welcome you, but we want you to know who we are. We want you to know we're a powerful people. We want you to know we have a history. We want you to know all that kind of thing.
And with that, he goes back to work on the carving of a bear, the lowest figure on this particular totem pole. You have to be more exacting, he says, when carving the low man on the totem pole, because that's the one everyone sees up close. Robert Smith, NPR News, Seattle.